copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
San Diego Police calling all cars, attention all cars. Broadcast 172. Be on the lookout for two men described as soldiers. Last seen driving Dodge touring car. One man has a deep voice. Thought to be heading for Mexican border. These men are killers, that's all.
Million miles, over 2,000 times around the world. What a test for gasoline. That's the police car performance test, run for you by your police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and emergency equipment last year. That's Rio Grande's cracked gasoline performance. Almost all gasolines are advertised as having more power, more pickup, more mileage, but no test compares with the operation of emergency equipment. For police cars like your own, have long, smooth, cruising miles that must be economical. They start and stop in traffic all day long. But when those accelerators go down to the floor and the sirens open wide, it's Rio Grande cracked gasoline and only Rio Grande that powers more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment wherever it is sold than any other brand. 50 million miles. That should be the test to end all tests for gasoline as far as you are concerned. When those to whom gasoline performance means the most overwhelmingly choose Rio Grande cracked. And remember, Rio Grande's 50 million mile tests are run with the same gasoline that you can buy at your independent Rio Grande dealers. Tonight, it is our pleasure to present Captain Harry J. Kelly, Chief of Detectives of the San Diego Police Department. Captain Kelly.
Good evening. The case you will hear tonight is an excellent example of what happens when human beings make the mistake of taking the first step on the wrong side of the law. One small thing leads to another until the final and costliest error is made, that of taking another human's life. The men who found themselves assigned to the job of running a criminal's in tonight's story down, discovered that they had bitten off almost more than they could chew. It was more than a tough job. It was a seeming impossibility. However, because part of their early training in the importance of hanging on to a clue, no matter how thin it may seem, these officers managed to push aside the obstacles in their way and eventually accomplish the impossible, that of bringing their men back to face justice. It was a long chase and a hard one, but it proved very definitely that in a final analysis, crime is a poor paying business.
It is the morning of January 10th, 1918. John C. Shelton, lineman for the Consolidated Gas and Electric Company of San Diego, and two members of his crew are repairing a telephone line. The sun, shining brightly, throws shadows of eucalyptus trees clearly on the warm surface of a paved road. The sun, the heat, after a long siege of winter rains, creates a relaxing atmosphere. The men long to be finished with the job, long to rest during their noon hour. Shelton is perched on the cross arm of a telephone pole. The others are waiting below.
Are you going to want a new insulator for that line, Shelton?
No, the insulator's all right. The line itself is just loosened a little. I'll get it in a minute. Needs a little tightening is all.
You can finish any time you want to, as far as I'm concerned. I'm hungry. I want to sit out in the sun and eat for days and days and days. Some nice, cool milk, some good sandwiches.
It seems to me you're always hungry. Well, I got to keep going some way. I'll bet you and Shelton would just as soon stretch out in the sun for a while. Isn't that right, Shelton?
What's that?
I was just saying that this is a sort of a lazy day.
Yeah, you're right. I've got this finished now. We can rest for a while. Ah, say, this is a swell day, all right. Quiet, peaceful. Hey, there's a guy that has the right idea. Stretched out in the grass over there. He looks like he's out like a light. Oh, that's the life. Nothing to do but sleep. Hey, wait a minute. He can't be sleeping like that. His face is right in the dirt.
Huh?
Yeah. You guys take a run over there and see what's wrong with him.
Okay. Come on, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here he is. Hey, this guy's dead. There's a hole in the back of his head.
Ooh.
You better call the police, Shelton.
Yeah. Wait till I tap this wire and see if I can get through a line into police headquarters.
Acting upon this information, Chief Hayes of the San Diego Police Department immediately sends Detective Lieutenants Harry Kelly and James Patrick to the scene. Accompanied by Chief of Police S.P. McMullen and Captain of Detectives Joseph Myers, the men make a search. From the body, they remove several letters in the wallet, which establishes the victim's identity as being one Frank McCrary, a San Diego taxi driver. Tire marks show where a car has been driven off the road, stopped, turned around, and headed back on the highway going east. And slim as this lead seems, Myers and Kelly decide to follow the tracks, while the others finish the investigation of the murder scene, then return to headquarters. The first move is to check on McCrary's actions as far as possible, and accordingly, Sergeant Joseph Lopez is assigned the task. His initial step is to interrogate a cab driver friend of McCrary's.
Your name register?
Yeah, but if you're a salesman, you're wasting your time. I'm very busy.
Now, wait just a minute. I'm sorry that you're busy, but I'll have to take some of your time.
I would be interested in anything.
Hey, wait a minute, will you? I'm from the police, Detective Lopez, and I'm going to ask you some questions.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Are you sure you have the right place? I'm sure I didn't do nothing.
Well, if you just calm down for a minute, I'll tell you what I want. I want to ask you some questions about Frank McCrary. You know him?
Frank McCrary? Oh, yes, I know Frank McCrary. Has he gotten into trouble? I didn't think he ever did anything wrong.
Well, McCrary was killed last night.
Killed? Yeah. Does his family know about it? They live right down the street. I thought everybody liked McCrary. Who did it?
Now, wait just a minute, will you? We don't know who did it. He was found out on the road to Lemon Grove with a bullet hole in his head.
Well, it seems funny to me that anyone... Dead. Oh, everybody liked
him. Now, look, do you keep your cab near McCrary's?
Yeah, but I assure you, I didn't see nobody who did it. We all like McCrary.
Yeah, well, did you see him last night?
No, I was busy driving a couple of soldiers. Say, wait a minute. Where did you say they found McCrary?
Up on the road to Lemon Grove. He was just off the side in some grass and weeds.
The road to Lemon Grove? Lemon Grove?
Well, what's the sudden brown study about?
I'm just thinking about them soldiers. And about Frank being found on that
now,
same
look,
road.
Now, look, Mr. Register, if you've got something to tell me, how about coming out of it in a minute and talking?
Well,
what
I drove a couple of
soldiers
out that way last night, you see. About halfway to Lemon Grove, they got on my nerves and I pulled a gag and brought them back. They both had blue cap cords.
What's the cap cords got to do with it?
Oh, I don't know. Only I just happen to remember him, that's all.
I see. Well, look, suppose you tell me just what these two soldiers did from the time you picked them up on. Can you do that?
Well, I didn't have supper until late because my wife's been sick. She had an operation. I guess I needn't tell you.
No, don't bother. Just tell me what the soldiers did, if you will.
Yeah, I will. Well, they came up and asked me to take them to Lemon Grove, you see, and I said, sure, boys, jump in and start it out. After a while, one of them leaned over in the seat and began to ask questions about the car. I guess he'd never driven a car and wanted to learn, you see. And I told him I'd teach him for $5. I've had quite a few people want to learn, you know. I think everybody should learn to drive a car, don't you?
Yes, I do. Now, what did the soldiers do?
Oh, well, this guy wanted to know all about the gear shifts and stuff, and I answered his questions for a while. But when we got to National City, he told me to take a shortcut down the road, see? And I knew there wasn't a shortcut, and I got suspicious, and I stalled my motor. You see? And I just pulled the choke out, and it stalls. They didn't even catch on. I guess they're pretty dumb about cars, all right. I think they'd have seen him pull out the joke, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes. Then what happened?
Well, I was scared. But I didn't let them know it, see? I told them that I had engine trouble. I says, I guess we better go back, boys. And they didn't say anything, so I turned around and come back. Well, when we got within the city limits, they said they wanted to get out, and I said, well, heck, boys, I'll take you right back where I picked you up. I won't charge you anything, neither. No, you're paying for what you don't get. They wouldn't hear of it, so I let them out at the edge of the city. They said they'd take the streetcar and the rest of the way. Well, I was willing to drive them back downtown because I had to go there anyway, but they just got out.
Well, do you think you could identify them if you saw them again?
Well, do you think they're the ones who did it? Sure, I'd know them. They're both young. But they didn't look like they'd do anything like that. You know, I was a little suspicious at the time, but I didn't think they'd kill nobody. If I'd thought that, you know what I'd done? I'd call the police, that's what. They were young. And they said, let's see now, they said they were from that 157th Infantry, that's it. Oh, I've seen worse-looking men.
Well, now, wait just a minute, Mr. Register. Isn't there anything special you can remember about them?
Well, let me see. Of course, I didn't see him much, you know, because in the back seat, only one of them talked. Just one of them talked. He was the oldest one, I think. He said, a low voice, had an awful low voice. Say, there's Metz. He knows McCrary. Do you want to talk to him? I'll call him over if you do.
Yeah, call him.
Hey, Metz!
Yeah?
Come here! I don't think he knows anything about it. He's a pretty good friend of McCrary's. Come here, Matt. Hurry. Poor McCrary. I didn't think nobody'd want to hurt him. Hello, Matt. Say, McCrary was killed last night. This is a detective. I was telling about how everybody liked McCrary.
McCrary killed? Well, I was just talking to him last night.
Why, that's awful.
You saw him last night?
Well, yeah, we stayed by his car and talked for a while.
What sort of a car did McCurry drive?
A Dodge touring car.
Well, now, did you happen to see two soldiers around while you were there?
Yeah, two came up and hired his car while I was talking to him. You know who did it?
No, we're trying to find out. Suppose you tell me what these soldiers did.
Well, like I said, we were standing there, and they came up and asked Frank how long would it take to drive over to Lemon Grove, and he said it would take about an hour and a half, and they said it would be fine, and jumped in the back seat and drove down Fifth Street.
Mm-hmm. But what time was that?
Well, I'd been to a show. It was about 10:30.
You know, it just doesn't seem right not to have poor old Frank around no more. Oh, I'd like to lay my hands on...
Just a moment. Do either of you know if McCrary carried much money around with him?
Well,
I don't think so. None of us carry much more, you know, just enough to make change. It isn't safe these times. You never know. I never carry anything but a few tools out of my front seat. Frank used to carry a lap robe in his. I'd never do that. You know, I remember one time...
Just a minute. You say he carried a lap robe?
Yeah, I remember. It was a bright colored one. Blue and red checks.
Well, that may help. Now, look, Metz, do you think you could tell them if you saw them again?
Well, sure, I could tell them in a minute. I got a good memory for faces. They were young, and both of them were dark. The older one, the one who did all the talking, had sharp features, and the young one had flat features. He was shorter.
Mm-hmm. Remember anything else?
See, listen, did the one who did the talking have a low voice, Metz?
Yeah, that's right. He had a deep voice.
They must be the same ones. I remember the voice.
Say, did they get out with you, too?
Yeah, only I got suspicious and turned around when I was out in National City.
Gee.
Yeah, and supposing I hadn't turned around, maybe McCrary would be talking to you, and I'd be laying out there with a hole in my head.
A short time later, Myers and Kelly, who were heading east on the road where McCrary was found, called their office in San Diego. Learn what has been discovered there. Learn that the two men they are following are soldiers, one with an exceptionally low-pitched voice, that they are traveling in a Dodge touring car, learn of the brightly colored lap robe. With these clues, they continue along the road taken by the suspects, which leads through Imperial Valley, pick up more bits of information. The foreman of a railroad construction gang reports that he has seen a Dodge touring car parked on the side of the road with two soldiers working on the motor. The men rush to the spot, find nothing but a few footprints and an oily rag. Realizing, however, that they're on the right track and that the men have lost time, they speed to El Centro. Go to the sheriff of Imperial County, James Applestill, to request his cooperation.
Sheriff, we followed these men from San Diego. We're sure we were on the right track. In fact, we found traces of them just a few miles outside of El Centro. But we're going to have help now. You see, there are so many places they might go from here that, well, it would be next to impossible for two men to accomplish anything. We know we're close to them because they had engine trouble. We've got to have help now.
Well, I'll be glad to do all I can, boys. Now, if the men you're trailing are the murderers, they'll undoubtedly head for the Mexican border. Are you sure they're in uniforms?
Well, they've been identified as soldiers by everyone we've talked to.
Well, in that case, they'll have a hard time getting into Arizona. Now, I think the logical place to look for them is along the border. I'll call Calexico and have the officers from there make all the border points.
Sheriff, Mr. Bright's outside and wants to see you.
All right, send him in.
Yes, sir.
I'll get that call in. Can you think of any additional dope on those men?
No, I think you have it all.
Okay, I'll pass it along.
Yes, sir.
And get me the Calexico police.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Bright. I'll be right with you.
Oh, there's no hurry.
Calexico police. Johnson speaking.
Hello, Johnson. Applestill speaking.
Oh, hello, Sheriff. Something I can do?
Yes. I'd like to have you cover the border roads for me and help me pick up some men, Johnson. Now, here's a description. There are two of them, both in Army uniforms, 157th Infantry. Both dark. One has a very low-pitched voice. Huh? Yes, that's right, a low-pitched voice. Yeah, both young. They're driving a Dodge touring car. That's all we have on them.
We'll keep our eyes open, Sheriff.
All right. We'd like to get them. They're killers. But let me know as soon as anything develops.
What's all this about, Sheriff, these men in a Dodge?
Couple of men who committed a murder in San Diego are in this vicinity.
Did you say they were in a Dodge touring car?
Yeah, that's right. Why?
Because I passed a car like that on my way into town just a few minutes ago, parked on the side of the road.
Following up this bit of unexpected information, Captain Myers and Detective Kelly, led by Bright, are soon examining the car, which is a ruin. A brightly colored lap robe positively identifies it as belonging to McCrary. The spot where it is found is only a few hundred yards from the international border, which is unguarded at this point. But one conclusion is left. The fugitives have crossed the border into the Republic of Mexico. After a short conference, Myers and Kelly decide to continue after them personally. Hurried plans are made. and Deputy Sheriff Henry Gonzalez, well known along the border, is summoned.
Gonzalez, you probably know better than we do what we're going to get into down there.
See, I know.
Well, from now on, everything depends on luck. We may get help from the officials, and we may not. No matter what happens, we're going to do everything we can to get those men.
See, I will do everything I can to help.
So, early on the morning of January 11, 1918, the three men cross the border, speed along the nearly impassable Mexican roads. Suddenly, with no warning, their car comes to a shuddering halt, refuses to start again. Surrounded by an inquisitive group of natives, Myers at the wheel listens to the discouraging sound of a laboring start.
Well, it looks like we're through with the car.
Sure does.
I'll try it once more.
Yeah, go ahead. Get ready.
She's all through, I guess.
No fooling.
Gonzalez, see if anyone in this crowd has horses that we can buy.
See, I try.
Any of you
there? There's a car in the world that could stand up on these roads.
Yeah, fine country.
Just the place I've been looking for to spend my vacation, I don't think.
Senor Mike.
Yeah, what luck?
Senor, this man, he has horses. He also sees two American people that runs around.
Two Americans? Good. Get him to stay here and ask him where we can get a hold of the police.
Hours later, Myers, Kelly, and Gonzalez, accompanied by a group of Mexican police, are within 2 miles of the ranch where the fugitives have been seen.
Hey, you know, this ride can end any time as far as I'm concerned. Boy, I might say that I'm just a little bit sore.
No, I guess we aren't the men we used to be. I'm beginning to feel it, too.
Yeah. Hey, look at Gonzalez, you know. He's like a sack in that saddle. You know, that guy was probably born on a horse.
Yeah. Hey, look. They're all stopping. What do you suppose is up?
Which me?
Hey, Gonzalez. What's the idea? Tell them to keep going.
1 minute, senor. I find out why they have stopped.
Okay, no vayamos.
Ah, no vayamos más, senor. El rancho for escondido para mi hermano.
They say they will go no farther. They say this ranch belongs to one of the men's brothers. He will not go to it.
You tell him we don't want the brother. Tell him we want the men that are there.
Sure.
I already tell him that. They say the men are friends. They say they will not go.
Well, we'll go alone then. Find out how to get there.
They will not tell me, senor. They say we cannot go. They will be mad. I think it is better we do not go.
Well, I'm not going to give up when I'm this close. You tell him to go back. We'll find the place.
I think it is better we do not go, senor. It's better we keep friendly with him.
Balked at every turn, Myers and Kelly once again find themselves left with no choice but to return to Mexicali. But arriving there, they find news. The foreman, who earlier had tipped Gonzalez off as to the whereabouts of the suspects, claims that less than an hour after Myers and Kelly had left for the ranch, the two soldiers had appeared in Mexicali. But they apparently had discovered the fact that they were being followed and had left immediately. Realizing this makes matters even worse than before, the two detectives first checked with the Mexican military commander of the district of Baja California, Governor Esteban Cantu, who promises to have all his posts keep a lookout for the criminals. Then called San Diego to inform Chief Hayes of their progress. And here they receive their second piece of news within the day when Chief Hayes orders them back to San Diego. Says he has uncovered new evidence as to the identity of the wanted men. Accordingly, Myers and Kelly make the drive back to San Diego. Find that from a list of army deserters, 2 men and pictures of 2 more men answering the description of the murderers are being held for identification. The first 2 are released after being faced by Metz and Register, the cab drivers. But when they are shown the pictures of the other 2...
These are the 2... These are the ones who took the ride with me. They're the same ones, only I got suspicions and I came back. I remember this one. He's the one that told me to go down that street. He's the one that had the low voice. And he's the one that asked me all about the gear shift. I thought it was funny at the time, too. Are they the ones who killed McCrary? Where are they? If I could just lay my hands...
Wait a minute. Let Metz have a look at it.
These are the ones, all right. Remember I told you one had sharp features?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is him. He's the one that had the deep voice. This other one has flat features, just like I said. They're the ones that drove away with McCrary that night, and I'm sure of it.
Fine. Well, that's about all you can do for us now. We'll want to get in touch with you later, so don't leave town unless you let us know. We'll call on you when we need you. Goodbye.
So long.
I told you I had the right to all the time on that. I told you.
Now, Kelly, you go out to Camp Kearney. Gather every single article you can find that belonged to either of these men and bring them in.
Right.
We've got a little more to work with now. Check up on the Army records, too.
Hours later, the officer returned.
Well, how'd it go, Kelly?
Not so hot. They made a good job of it. They destroyed every bit of writing they had except these three cards. Wait a minute till I find them. Here they are. They're so dirty you can hardly read them.
What are their names?
William B. Grissom and Horace St. John Clark.
St. John, huh? That's a good one.
Yeah. Clark enlisted at Parkdale, Colorado, and Grissom at Denver.
Let me see those cards. Can you make anything out of them?
Yeah, I made a name out of one of them, but you better check it and see.
Yeah, I see him. Gladys Galbraith. I think that's it. Oh, here's an address. 1900. 1900 Stout. 1900. Hey, what's this? Park Hill, car 40. Park Hill, car. I've heard that before.
Oh, boy, it doesn't mean a thing to me.
Wait a minute. I've got it. I remember. It's a car line in Denver. That's it.
I didn't know that you ever been to Denver.
Sure, I lived there for about 3 months. That's what it is, I'm sure of it. This must be an address there, too. Sure it is. I remember Stout Street now. Get me a clerk. I'll get a letter off to the police in Denver and have them get a hold of this Gladys Galbraith.
The Denver police, on receipt of the letter, go to work at once. Detective George Eade and Henry J. Genty are sent to the address. And an hour later, they have Gladys Galbraith in their office, are questioning her.
Well, Gladys, do you know two soldiers named Grissom and Clark?
Yeah, I know Bill Grissom. Why?
Have you heard from him lately?
No, I'm married now, and I don't want to have anything to do with him. I don't want to be bothered about him.
Well, where is he now, do you know?
No, I don't know where he is, and what's more, I wouldn't tell you if I did. What do you think of that?
Well, if you don't know where he is, you can't help us.
That's right. Can I go now?
Sure, you can go.
Thanks.
What's the idea, Ede? She knows more than she's telling.
I know that. We're going to keep our eyes on her and watch her mail. If she thinks we're through with her, she'll be natural. You know, she'll keep on doing the things she usually does.
Oh, I get it. And I'm just the boy to do it. So long.
Days pass and nothing develops. But on the third day, Genty intercepts a letter addressed to Gladys Galbraith. And after one glance at the signature, he bursts in on Ede.
Here's a letter from Grissom.
Good. Let's have it. Don't tell anyone I am here. My life wouldn't be worth a dime if you did. I am working at the John Smith Ranch, 12 miles from Fountain. Listen to this. Come to Fountain on Tuesday. We'll meet you there, and we'll have the ranch payroll. We'll go to Mexico. I'll meet you at the corner of 3rd and Mill Street. Well, Gentry, something tells me you and I are due for a little trip to the corner of 3rd and Mill Street in Fountain.
And the next day at 1:30, Ede and Gentry are in the little town of Fountain, standing on the corner of 3rd and Mill Street.
Well, nice, quiet little town, this.
Yeah. How are we supposed to pick out these guys when there isn't anybody on the street?
Well, there's no danger of any false arrests. That's one thing. Hey, don't look now. But I think our men are walking this way. One of them's looking around as if he's expecting somebody. Let's just slip around the corner here and see if they stop. Okay, it's far enough. They're stopping, all right. Come on.
Hello, boys. Waiting for someone?
Yeah, what's it to you guys?
Say, you got an awful low voice, haven't you? You wouldn't be William Grissom, would you?
Nah. Come on, let's go.
Now, wait just a minute. I kind of think you are Grissom. The Grissom that killed a man in San Diego. What do you think of that?
You're nuts.
And the Grissom that wrote to Gladys Galbraith and said you'd meet her here with a payroll from the Smith Ranch.
You're nuts.
Come on, quit stalling. We got you cold, Grissom, and you too, Clark. Horace St. John Clark. How about it?
Come on,
spill it. Your name's Clark, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, there isn't any use, Bill. These guys have
it. Keep your mouth shut before I shut it for you.
Yeah, but they're liable to start shooting if we don't go with them.
Why, you cheap little squealer. I'm going to break every bone in your body.
Don't do that, Bill. I'm only trying to keep us out of more trouble.
Yes, sure, by blabbing your face off to these flatfoots. Why, you...
Bill!
All right, boys. I hate to bust this up, but we've got a date in San Diego. Yeah, maybe you can finish things here. Come on, Eve. Help me tear these boys apart before they kill each other. Not that'd be such a bad idea at that. Save the law of the trouble. Come on.
Break it up. Come on, you. Come on.
On May 16, 1918, Grissom was found guilty by the General Court Martial Board at Camp Kearney of murder, theft, and desertion, and was sentenced to hang. Clark, although just 18, was found guilty of theft and desertion and sentenced to Leavenworth Prison for 30 years. Grissom beat the news, however, when the President of the United States commuted his sentence to that of life at McNeil's Federal Prison. Thus, the brutal slaying of Frank McCrary was finally closed, with a notation written on the files, closed by 3 bits of cardboard.
Thank you, Captain Kelly. Tonight, we salute great, prosperous Orange County, with her fast-growing cities, her clean, white beaches, productive groves, her progressive citizens, and fearless and efficient law enforcement officers. Orange County again specifies Rio Grande cracked gasoline to power her police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment for another year. Every year, the list of cities and counties flying the Rio Grande banner grows larger. Oakland, Berkeley, Marysville, Fresno, Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Pasadena, Monterey Park, San Diego County, Maricopa County, Coconino County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties specify Rio Grande cracked gasoline for its all-inclusive qualities of police car performance. And with Rio Grande cracked gasoline, the famous Sinclair oil completes the police car performance combination, whether in emergency equipment or in your own car. De-waxed, de-jellied, super-refined Sinclair is sold in 45 countries of the world for the finest lubrication of automobile, airplane, railway, and industrial motors. When you ask for Sinclair oil or Rio Grande cracked gasoline, ask your independent Rio Grande dealer for a copy of the new issue of Calling All Cars News, with latest radio and movie gossip, photographs of screen stars, featured articles, star interviews, and many interesting news stories. Make it a point to drive into an independent Rio Grande service station tomorrow and get police car performance in your own car.
San Diego police calling all cars. Attention, all cars. Cancellation broadcast 172. Regarding a murder and a robbery. Suspects in this case now in custody. That's all.
Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.